This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away this week. With the deadline for registering with the INS looming before them, Pakistani men and their families are heading north in large numbers, hoping they can find political asylum in Canada. It's the latest manifestation of the sense of panic that has gripped the Muslim community since the INS began requiring men from 25 countries, mostly predominantly Muslim, to be fingerprinted, photographed, and interviewed. The next deadline in the process comes at the end of March for men from Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. 19,000 men from Bangladesh, Egypt, Indonesia, Jordan, and Kuwait have until April 25th to register. The registration was implemented as an anti-terrorism measure after it was revealed that three of the September 11th hijackers had overstayed their visas. The Department of Justice says the policy is an effective method for rooting out potential terrorists, but critics say the system of required registration is racial profiling. And in earlier rounds of the registration, the INS detained large numbers of men who had applications pending for permanent residency. What are your questions about the National Security Entry-Exit Registration System? Is it an important tool in the war on terrorism? Does it cast too wide a net? What message does it send to the Muslim population in this country? Have you or someone you know been asked to register? We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or email us at totm@npr.org. Joining us now is immigration attorney Denise Sabah. She's on the phone from her office here in Washington. Thanks for joining us, Ms. Sabah.
Nice to be with you.
First of all, have you had men from these 25 countries coming to you to seek legal advice?
Yes, I have.
And what are they most concerned about?
They're concerned about the registration, and they're afraid. They're concerned that if they go into the immigration service and they register, they're not going to come out of the immigration service because of all the stories they have heard from the first round of registrations of many people being detained and in jail for several days or weeks.
What are the stories that are circulating? What are some of the things that people are hearing?
Well, what they had heard from the first round of registration was that when people went in to register, in good faith, they went in, they followed the rules, they walked in, and then what happened to people was they were put in detention, either, and it's unclear why. INS says that they really, you know, didn't quite have themselves organized, and so a lot of the people might have been in detention because they weren't able to do the checks that they were supposed to do. Other people who had applications for green cards pending, who might have been out of status for a period of time but now have their applications for green cards pending, were put into jail and deportation proceedings. And so this caused quite a lot of fear in the community.
Now, as I understand it, the Justice Department sent out a memo in January saying to stop that practice of putting men who had applied for green cards or permanent residency and detaining them for deportation hearings. That practice was to be stopped. Do you know if it has been stopped?
I think that for the most part, it has been stopped. They do say it's a case-by-case basis, so it isn't a complete rule, but for the most part, we haven't been hearing the stories that we heard on the first round of registration. What people are concerned about when they go in is, you know, that they have applications pending. They thought that they had abided by the law with regard to these applications, and then they're concerned that maybe they don't have enough information or the INS doesn't have it, and they're going to end up being put in jail. And what happens is if the Immigration Service thinks that you're out of status, in some of the jurisdictions, the offices have said if you come in with a bond amount, an amount of $1,500 with a check or a cashier's check or a money order, that should hopefully expedite the process so that you're not put in jail. But the reality of it in a lot of instances is because of the processing, they will wait until they have enough people that they're going to take over to investigations, so they're arrested, technically arrested, handcuffed, and then taken over to investigations. If investigations cannot process you in time, then you're put in jail overnight or however long it takes to process you before you can actually give them that money order or cashier's check you came in with.
Huh. What's become of the men who were being detained for deportation hearings or were slated for deportation hearings? They've stopped that practice, apparently, but what happens to those who already were detained, and are they being deported?
Well, it all depends on each individual case, mm-hmm. but if they had applications for permanent residency pending, then their attorneys could go back to the Immigration Service and ask them to terminate deportation proceedings against them. It's unclear across the country how this is working, if these motions to terminate are being granted or not. And then for people who are in deportation and do have applications for permanent residency pending, they will continue with their deportation proceeding if the government doesn't agree to terminate the proceedings.
We're talking about the INS special registration process. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-TALK. You can email us at totn@npr.org. Let's go to Carrie in St. Louis. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering am I to understand that there's no other reason than their race that these people are being targeted?
Well, at this point, the Immigration Service has only targeted people from Muslim countries or Arab countries and men over the age of 16. The Immigration Service says that this program actually will be expanded to all countries. However, that hasn't happened yet, and the only countries that are involved pretty much are Arab and Muslim countries and men over the age of 16.
North Korea is involved as well.
North Korea, excuse me.
Is the only other one. So does that answer your question, Carrie?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. Denise, what do you tell your clients to do?
When clients come in to see us, we go through their immigration status very carefully with them to make sure that we know whether or not they're going to have problems when they are going in. And if we think they're going to have problems, we make sure we get a cashier's check for $1,500. But we tell them to make sure they have their passport, the document that you get when you come into the United States that tells the INS what your status is and how long you're allowed to stay. It's called an I-94. We tell them if they're students to have the document they get from their school that tells them, the INS, that they're a valid student. It's called a Form I-20. We also tell them if they're students to bring in their affidavits of support to show that they have funds available to them in the United States. If they're working in the United States, we tell them to bring the approval notices from the Immigration Service, giving them that status and letters, verification of employment letters from their employer and pay stubs. We also tell them to bring in lease agreements or proof of that where they live and their driver's license. The Immigration Service is also asking for bank information and credit card information. So if they have that information with them, they can provide that. If they don't, they don't provide it. Each of the offices around the country handle the registration differently. There doesn't seem to be a uniformity or consistency. So some offices may want a lot of documentation and may want copies of it to keep. Other offices don't want to keep any documentation. They just want to see that you have it. Some offices will ask you to fill out a questionnaire, and then that questionnaire is used to input the information into the computer system. Other offices don't use a questionnaire. Some offices keep the questionnaire. Other offices don't. What we try to do is prepare our clients so that they will know, to the best of our knowledge, what will happen to them when they walk in the door, because the fear of the unknown and the fear of the INS power is very overwhelming for clients.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Denise.
You're welcome.
Denise Sabah is an immigration attorney based here in Washington, D.C. Joining us now by phone is Chris Kobach. He is the counsel to the Attorney General on Immigration and Border Security, and he's also based here in Washington. Welcome to the program, Mr. Kobach.
Thank you.
Tell me first, what does the Department of Justice hope to accomplish with this registration?
Well, there are a number of goals. Probably the first and most prominent is preventing terrorists, criminals, and prior deportees from entering the country by identifying and arresting them at the port of entry. Of course, this registration operates both at the port of entry, and then there has been the domestic enrollment of individuals who came in prior to its implementation at the port of entry in October. The second goal would be to implement an entry-exit system for aliens who present elevated national security concerns, and that's actually been mandated by Congress that we do so by 2005. So this is this all-important first step of closing the entry-exit loop for the population that presents the highest concern at this point. And thirdly, enabling the United States to verify that foreign visitors are doing what they said they were doing and leaving when they said they would leave and living where they said they would live. For example, the 19 terrorists on September 11th, all 19 came in and did something completely different from what they said they were going to do on their forms when they entered the country. Three of them overstayed their visas. We had no information that this had occurred. It was a real vulnerability in the system and showed that we needed to regain control of our borders and to ensure that that our open invitation to visitors around the world not be abused. And so this registration system deploys fingerprints at the port of entry and allows us to run the prints of incoming visitors. There's no pen and ink, ink and paper like the old-fashioned prints. It's a quick digital check, and we run that digital check against a database of known terrorists, also against fingerprints collected in al-Qaeda training camps, safe houses, and caves. We can stop terrorists at the border that way.
I guess the biggest question really, though, is, I mean, I presume that a lot of illegal immigrants are not going to register, and why would potential terrorists register with the government?
Now, you're referring, of course, to people who are called in the domestic enrollment portion. And this, I just want to clarify for people that the recent calling in of people from particular countries is because we're trying to gather information on folks who came in before the system was up at the border. There are a number of reasons. One is that if a person is, let's say that they've violated the immigration laws or they're a criminal, they may not know that the INS and the federal government has the records that would allow us to apprehend them when they come in. Also, if they fail to come in and they are subsequently encountered by law enforcement, they will have committed a criminal violation for failing to register, and that's a pretty serious violation of the law. And as far as terrorists coming in, we know that the pattern of behavior for al-Qaeda, and indeed the way they've been instructed, is to, as far as possible, try to comply with immigration laws and try not to draw attention to themselves. And this program has already apprehended 8 suspected terrorists in 5 months, in addition to 525 criminals or prior deportees who've been stopped at the port of entry.
How do you respond to the criticism that by singling out Muslim countries, that this is racial, men from Muslim countries, that this is racial profiling?
Well, I would say this. First of all, it's not Muslim countries or men who are Muslims. There's no characterization anywhere in the program or any of the standards that make any mention of religion or race. It doesn't matter what religion a person is. And to the extent that the countries that have been named have been chosen, they haven't been chosen at all because of any religious affiliation. It's entirely geographic, and that is to say these are all countries that are either state sponsors of terrorism, as designated by the U.S. State Department, or they are places where al-Qaeda has recruited and operated. So it's a sad fact that some of our closest allies are on this list of countries where we've asked people to come in and register simply because al-Qaeda has abused their territory and has made those places a base of operation.
All right. We're talking with Chris Kobach. He's the counsel to the Attorney General on Immigration and Border Security. And when we return, we'll be talking more about the reasoning behind this special registration process and whether it's good for national security. Have you been asked to register? We'd like to hear about your experience. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, or you can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the special registration that requires thousands of male foreign nationals to register at INS offices around the country or risk deportation. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Still with us is Chris Kovach, counsel to the Attorney General on Immigration and Border Issues. And Mr. Kovach, I'd like to ask you about something that was raised by our first guest, Denise Saba, immigration attorney. She said she indicated that there seems to be an inconsistency from state to state, perhaps city to city, in the way this process is handled. Is that true?
Well, if there are inconsistencies, I would hope that they're primarily minor ones. There certainly is uniform guidance that has gone out to the field in the INS. There may be small inconsistencies that have to do with the capabilities of different ports of entry. Some ports of entry have faster cabling and computer systems than others, and so minor changes have to be made. But the guidelines that determine what an alien who's visiting this country is asked to provide are the same across the country. There is, of course, a prosecutorial discretion given to INS officers, and that's entirely appropriate. If a person, for example, comes in and it turns out the person has overstayed their visa and perhaps they've only overstayed for a few days, that will rely on an individual call by the INS inspector to determine whether the individual should be placed in removal proceedings or given a break or some other action taken. So there of course is some room for prosecutorial discretion, and there has to be.
All right, let's take a call from Steve in Montrose, Colorado. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. To me, it seems like the INS is using its policy to cover up its own ineptitude at doing its initial job that it's appointed to do. I mean, essentially verifying visas and green cards of all nationalities is its job. So how is this program different than what it's designated to do initially?
All right, thanks for that question, Steve, and let's see if Mr. Kovach can answer that.
Yeah, I think there's no question. I don't know if I'd use the word ineptitude, but there's no question that there has been failure in the past to meet the objectives of trying to verify if people are abiding by the terms under which they entered this country. For example, there have been cases where select samples of individuals the INS has tried to go out and see if they're still in this country using the old system with the I-94, which is a little piece of paper about the size of a parking ticket, and that's all the information we collected on individuals. Several hijackers from 9/11 wrote they just were coming to the United States to stay at the Ramada Hotel, New York. That's all the information we had. And when we've gone out and looked and see how reliable that information is, it's not very reliable at all, which is precisely why this registration system had to be developed, so that for those nationals who present an elevated security risk to the United States, we can get the kind of robust information that we need, and frankly, the kind of information that other countries around the world have been gathering for decades. In Europe, registration systems like this, which aren't as computerized and as high-tech as this one, but have been around for a longer time, in Europe, systems like this are very routine. Individuals who stay for a period of time have to periodically check in and just show that they're living where they said they would live and doing what they said they would do. And a lot of Americans who've lived in Europe are very familiar with that.
Now, I have read that a lot of men, because of what they've seen happen to some of the people who first went to register, the detentions, have decided not to go, that they're going to take the chance and not register at all because they don't want to risk deportation. They may eventually be found and deported, but that's what they're deciding to do. So is this accomplishing what it set out to accomplish if people are not turning up because they're afraid?
Well, I would say that it has accomplished that. The number of people who have turned up is extremely good, and based on the projections that the INS has of individuals in this country, those projections are being matched. That is to say, we're not falling short in the number of people who've come in and registered as opposed to the number of people that we expected to come in. Secondly, we've done everything we can to make registration a process that's not burdensome and something that is the appropriate thing to do. There have been a number of things we've done. We've offered people voluntary departure to the maximum limit of 120 days. What that means is if a person is out of status, perhaps they've overstayed their visa for 6 months or a year or more, and they're afraid that if they come in, they're going to be removed and never able to come to the United States again. Well, if they have 4 months of voluntary departure, that means they've got 4 months to get their affairs in order. They can leave the country, and they'll be eligible to come back in. They just need to reapply for a visa at the State Department abroad. So giving them options like this, extending registration deadlines. We've tried to do everything we can to let people know that we don't want this to be a burdensome process. We just need to get better to regain control of our borders and gain better information on what people are here and whether they've overstayed and what they're doing.
Let's take a call. James in San Francisco. Hi.
Hi. My main concern is that the underlying principle of these actions by the INS seem to be based on the presumption of guilt. Essentially, you have, bureaucratic ineptitude, as everyone's admitted, being used as the basis for handcuffing people and imprisoning people. As if the INS had simply processed these people's applications correctly, they would be set free. And in the absence of that evidence, they are instead imprisoned until the INS can figure out what happened. It just seems to me that we're turning the basic rights and liberties of humans on their head in this.
Mr. Kovacs?
Yeah, I think I appreciate that question because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. To date, about 41,000 individuals have come in for domestic registration and have responded to that call. Of those, approximately 100 are in custody right now. And of those 100, 42 are serious felons. To give you a couple of examples, one individual in California had already committed 3 times the crime of assault with a deadly weapon. Another individual had been convicted of cocaine trafficking. These are individuals who came in, were violating our immigration laws. That's to say they were here illegally, and they had past criminal records. In those situations, the INS has appropriately taken them into custody, and there are 42 individuals who fall into that category. The other 60-some individuals are ones who present severe flight risks. But if you look at the total picture, 40,000 individuals and only 100 actually in custody, I think there's been a lot of exaggeration.
All right, here's an email from a listener. If the war on terrorism is fought against terrorist organizations with global reach, why are we only targeting people from primarily Muslim and or Arab countries as well as North Korea? And terrorists could come from anywhere, such as Canada and France. Real terrorists would cover their tracks, possibly by moving from country to country.
That's a great question, Anna, and I'm glad she asked it, because at the port of entry, there is no distinction between countries. Anyone can be registered in this program, and to date, we have registered a total of just over 80,000 individuals from 149 different countries, and it's precisely because of threats from individuals such as Richard Reed, who is a citizen of the United Kingdom, that we wouldn't want to limit it to just certain countries. So at the port of entry, INS inspectors are using intelligence-based criteria to try to figure out which individuals pose the highest risks, and they look at things like travel patterns, and they determine at the port of entry who should be registered, and it can be from any country. So it is indeed a global threat, and this system is designed to address that threat. It's only the domestic enrollment where we have limited resources, and we can only gather the information from a limited number of countries where we have to make some choices, and there we chose countries which are state sponsors of terrorism or places where Al-Qaeda has operated.
All right. Another call. Sabri in Bethesda, Maryland. Sabri?
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to comment that I know my perception and the perception of every Arab in this country and in the rest of the world is that this registration program is simply a way of trawling the population here for people of Middle Eastern descent and applying the visa laws unevenly against them because, these laws are not applied very stringently to so many other ethnic groups and countries, in order to get as many of them out of the country. And I think it's completely bald-faced. I think it's completely thinly veiled. And I think it's completely racist because, let me guess how your intelligence criteria were used to pick up those people from other countries, because no Al-Qaeda is going to come through and register. Perhaps I would bet you it's because they're brown. And why do I have such little faith in your intelligence criteria? It's because you have such a dismal track record. For example, in 1990, the INS detained 10 people from L.A., and they spent 5 years in prison. They're known as like the L.A. 8 or the L.A. 10, based on your secret evidence, which is, meant to be of the highest intelligence caliber. One guy who came in, finally when a judge was... when the case came up to a court high enough for the judge to see the evidence, the evidence against him, for example, they said, aren't you a member of such and such a terrorist group? And the terrorist group was the airline he'd flown in on.
All right, Sabri, I'm going to let Mr. Kobach answer you. Thanks for the call. Thanks for making that point.
No problem.
I would mention two things in response. One is he said that no Al-Qaeda member would register. Of the 8 suspected terrorists that I mentioned earlier, several are known Al-Qaeda members based on U.S. intelligence gathering either domestically or overseas. So I would simply dispute that with the facts. As far as this being some sort of veiled effort to troll populations of Middle Eastern descent, it's simply not the case. The individuals, as I said before, can be, there is no distinction in terms of ethnicity or religion, and there is no effort to apply laws more vigorously, as the caller suggested. Indeed, the number of individuals who've been placed in removal proceedings where they will have all of the legal recourse that any immigrant has if they're asked to be removed, if they're asked to leave the country because they violated our laws, that the number is about 10% of the total individuals who've come in and registered. So it's a fairly small percentage. And to date, only one person of those 80,000 people registered totally, both at the port of entry and domestically, only one person has been removed thus far. And part of that is because our system is so robust with legal protections. You can go through multiple hearings, go before an immigration judge, then go to a Board of Immigration Appeals if you feel that the immigration judge decided your case wrongly, and then take your case into the Circuit Courts of Appeals of the U.S. federal courts. So, there are so many protections in the system. I think people really have to look at the facts.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Kobach.
My pleasure.
Chris Kobach counsels the Attorney General on immigration and border security issues. Joining us now is James Zogby. He's the president of the Arab American Institute. He's on the phone with us from Davidson College in North Carolina. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Maybe you could just outline for us your real concerns about this registration process, and I know you've been listening to Mr. Kobach, so perhaps you could address some of what he's been saying, too.
Well, I think that Mr. Kobach makes a case for an agency that's trying to get a job done. My question is, basically, should the job have been should they have been asked to do the job in the first place? And once given the job, should it not have been better designed, better funded, and better implemented? The fact is that it was done in a discriminatory fashion. The fact is that the INS local offices around the country were ill-equipped, ill-prepared. They did not do adequate outreach. I know because my office called and surveyed INS offices around the country to say, what are you doing and have you done the outreach work? They were depending on us to do it, and we were not equipped to do the job that they should be doing. And they were not staffed. We talked to the L.A. office, and they told us that, oh, we're all set. We have a questionnaire prepared, and we've done our outreach, and we're going to be able to handle about 100 people a day. And they got 800 people showing up. And that's why they ended up detaining 700 Iranians, mostly, and creating this huge national uproar. INS were better funded, were better staffed, if they were better prepared to do this job, and if it were done across the board equally, we would not have the problem that we have. Our problem was how this was done and basically who it was done to.
So you think that there could be a program protecting against potential terrorists that isn't discriminatory?
Well, the question is, again, is this special registration protection against terrorism, or is it an effort to get our immigration system under control? I don't think that the two are the same thing. I mean, what we know about Al-Qaeda and what we know about how it operates is that it is not easy to detect in the manner in which they're going about this program. I think that the need to do registration of immigrants to deal with the massive problem of a system out of control, efforts need to be made. Is it the same as dealing with terrorism? I don't think it is, and I think that they would be hard pressed to make the case. We are expending law enforcement resources in one job, which is cleaning up the INS system, but immigration policy is not the same as counterterrorism policy, and they simply can't make the case that it is.
James Zogby is president of the Arab American Institute, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255, and let's go to Betsy in Los Angeles. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. First of all, I'd just like to thank Mr. Kobach, because I think he's doing a really good job of articulating what the government is trying to accomplish in terms of keeping people who want to harm Americans out of the country. I guess the question I have is, I actually believe the facts themselves tend to not be that well publicized by the government, and one of the facts you brought up was that out of 40,000 people that were registered, there have only been 100 detained, and of those, 40 were serious criminals. So my question is, what is the government planning on doing to educate Americans about this? Because just the tone of this program is an example of how a lot of people tend to feel about these issues. They tend to assume that it's racist. They tend to assume that they're actually, for example, the last guest said that there's a difference between immigration policy and counterterrorism. Well, clearly the events of September 11th have taught us that there isn't really a clear distinction, because there are a lot of people out there that happen to be from some identifiable countries
that
sponsor terrorism.
All right, thanks so much for your call, and let's see if James Ogbey can respond.
Yeah, my point, Betsy, is the following. I agree that there are people who want to harm us, and I agree that we need better investigatory approaches and better security protection taken. The question is, when you're looking for a needle in a haystack, do you want to simply add more hay to the stack, which is what this program does? The problem with crude profiling, that is to say all people from this country come in and register by such and such a date, is that it draws the field too large and brings in too many people and makes the job of law enforcement more difficult. 40,000 down to 40 is not really good odds. What a real investigatory approach would do, if you talk to law enforcement, if this project had been designed by law enforcement, not by political people at the Department of Justice, they would have said, let's base this program now, because we have a crisis now, on behavioral characteristics. Let's look at people who are a security threat, and let's go after them. You might then narrow the field down to 400 to get to the 40 people who are the criminals, instead of having to overtax the system of INS and law enforcement people to have to go through a field of 40 or 80,000. That's my problem with this. It's simply not good law enforcement.
If this registration system were extended to immigrants from all countries, would that ease your concerns?
Well, the question is, what job do you want to do? Given the fact that we're in a crisis right now, do we want to clean up the INS system, or do we want to unleash our investigatory agencies to root out terrorists and do that job?
I
think that it's a difficult situation to try to do both at the same time.
Thanks so much.
The cleanup job on INS is not the same as an investigation of terrorism.
Thanks so much, Mr. Ogbey.
Sure.
James Ogbey is president of the Arab American Institute.